Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 18, text number 62. Chakarta, Chakarta Saptadha Gharbam, Vajrena Kanaka Prabham, Rudantam Saptadai Kaikam, Marodir Ititan Puna. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After entering Diti's womb, Indra, with the help of his thunderbolt, cut into 7 pieces her embryo, which appeared like glowing gold. In 7 places, 7 different living beings began crying. Indra told them, "Do not cry." And then he cut each of them into 7 pieces again. Purport. Srila Vishvanatha Thakur Chakravarti remarks that Indra, by his yogic power, first expanded the body of the one Marut into 7. And then when he cut each of the 7 parts of the original body into pieces, there were 49. When each body was cut into 7, other living entities entered the new bodies, and thus they were like plants, which become separate entities when cut into various parts and planted on a hill. The first body was one, and when it was cut into many pieces, many other living entities entered the new bodies. Everybody understand this shloka? You understand it? You're nodding yes. You can give us explanation. Can we understand this shloka? Who said yes? Let me hear. Give explanation. I cannot understand it, but you can understand. We have Diti who is pregnant. Indra makes himself smaller than the smallest, enters into her womb. How he got there, who knows? Then he sees the embryo. It's glowing like gold. He cuts it into 7 pieces. He hears voices crying. He says, "Don't cry," and he cuts each piece again into 7 pieces. Who can understand this? Is this within our experience? Can we understand this, or do we just accept it on faith? Sorry? He accepts it on faith. Who accepts it on faith, and who understands it so that we can get explanation? Sorry? What can you understand? Give me the mic.
Actually, we can understand that how there is so much of envy within the heart of Indra that he's wanting to make sure that, you know, the child dies. So he's again and again ensuring that the child is cut and cut. And so we can understand the human nature, that how the person can be so envious. Being a demigod, he can have such evil intentions toward the small embryo.
Now, Indra is superior Vaishnava to us.
Yeah.
Is it not? In Svargaloka, he is the king. When Narada Muni was searching out who is the greatest Vaishnava, one of the persons he was recommended to see was Indra. So why Indra is doing these things? To us, it appears like he's envious. To us, it appears that he's very attached to his position. And many times when he sees that his position may be compromised, he takes all efforts to stop that so he can maintain his position as king of heaven. This is one example. Another example is when Vishvamitra Muni was doing his meditation under the water. There wasn't even a threat to Indra, but he was thinking, this Vishvamitra Muni is going to get so powerful, I have to stop him. He sent Menaka. Vishvamitra Muni was under the water, eyes closed, meditating. Menaka, very beautiful apsara, she was on the bank. He was under the water. He could not see her. The only thing she could do was tinkle her ankle bells. Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. He's in his meditation. But he hears tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Immediately, his mind starts thinking. Just like we chant Hare Krishna, and immediately our mind starts thinking. So immediately his mind is thinking, ankle bells. Who wears ankle bells? Ladies. Some lady is there. Mind is thinking, wonder what she looks like. Is she pretty? Anyway, he came out of the water to have a look. To make a long history very short, Shakuntala was born. So, this Indra, which is a post, Indra is a post. Some living entity has that post of Indra, king of the demigods. You can see how deep is the attachment. We're so attached to what we think is ours, aham mameti, I and mine, me. What is, you know, I, me, mine, aham mameti. We're very attached. This attachment goes very, very deep. And it's based on acquiring material benefits. It's always like that. And this is very deep in the heart. One time, Narada Muni was walking through the forest and he came upon a beautiful lake. Then he saw in that lake there were the two sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nali Kuvera, enjoying with beautiful young ladies without clothes. When the ladies saw Narada Muni, great sage, they became completely embarrassed. They understood we're not doing right thing. Immediately they took their clothes to cover themselves. And they were feeling guilty. Doing wrong thing. Manigriva and Nalakuvara, they did not feel guilty. They felt angry. Now our fun is being spoiled. This Narada Muni has spoiled it for us. So they had a look of discontent on their face. Narada Muni can understand these boys are completely conditioned. They need a lesson. So quickly he said, you know, if you want to stand naked, I give you that benediction. You can stand naked, just like trees. When they heard that, they were shocked. Because in Vedic culture, when a great rishi says something, it always comes true. If he says something positive, that's considered benediction, and everyone goes, Haribo. And if he says something negative, that's considered a curse and everyone's freaking out. This is a material conception, auspicious, inauspicious. But we are taught that anything material is inauspicious. There's no such thing as auspicious and inauspicious for a Vaishnava. It's all inauspicious. Good karma is just as inauspicious as bad karma because it keeps us bound to the material perspective of life, material consciousness. We become attached. Just as it appears that Indra is attached. Now I'm saying it appears that Indra is attached. It appears that Indra is envious. Why am I saying that? Because he's my senior Vaishnava. I'm not going to say he's attached. I'm not going to say he's envious. It's not my position to find fault in another Vaishnava. But it certainly appears that way. Is it not? So when Manigriva and Nalakuvara heard that, they were shocked. Now Narada Muni, when he saw the look on their faces that they were shocked, they were like, ah! Then, you know, he's a Vaishnava. So he has a soft heart. Vaishnava is suridam sarva bhutanam. He's a well-wisher of every living entity. So then he thought, maybe I spoke a little too heavy. So he wanted to, you see, the thing is that when you say something, you can't withdraw it. You can't say, I'm sorry, I take it back. We do that today. You can't take it back. We're thinking we take it back, everything's okay. Once it's spoken, and it's recorded in the history of this planet forever. We're thinking that our thoughts aren't recorded and our words aren't recorded. Yamaraj knows everything. It's called the Akashic Record in the Akash. It's all there. And when you leave your body and go to the court of Yamaraj, it's all laid out before you. This was your life. This is what you said. This is what you did. This is what you thought. Guilty. Oh, but I'm Vaishnava, chanted Hare Krishna. Acquitted. So then Narada Muni, being soft-hearted, he said, okay, you'll have to become trees, but I give you the benediction that you'll be trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj when Krishna performs his pastimes on the planet Earth. So that was a benediction. So now let's go forward in time. Krishna is now on planet Earth in the house of Nanda Maharaj. And he's Damodar. And Damodar is tied around the waist by Mother Yashoda because he's a naughty boy. And that rope is tied to the mortar. And he's pulling that mortar behind him because he's going to do something now with the two trees. So Mother Yashoda has left him in this shed tied to the mortar, and she goes back into the kitchen to see to the cooking. The milk is boiling on the stove. So Krishna now pulls the mortar, drags it behind him and towards the two trees. And Krishna in the shloka in Bhagavatam says that these two trees are the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva Nala Kuvera. He says, I have nothing to do with them. That's what he says. But to honor the word of my pure devotee, because Narada Muni, when he gave them that curse, I forgot to mention, that they'd become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, they would have the darshan of Sri Krishna. So now, Damodar is pulling this, and he's thinking, I have nothing to do with these two boys. But to honor the word of my pure devotee, Narada Muni, I'm going to give my darshan to these two trees, to these two boys. So he goes between the two trees, Arjuna trees they were. The mortar gets caught. He pulls them down. The trees come crashing down, and out come these two demigods, Manigriva and Nala Kuvera, and they see baby Krishna, Damodar. And immediately they start offering prayers. And they're glorifying him and this and that. And after saying their prayers, they return to their own abode as purified devotees. They became purified just by the darshan of Sri Krishna in his baby form as Damodar. Just by that vision, all the anartas disappeared. In their hearts, that Krishna prema that was covered by the anartas manifested itself fully. And when they returned back to their home, to their abode, their home with at the palace of Kuvera, they were changed. They were no longer the lusty young men, but they were devotees, purified devotees. So my question is, what was it that Manigriva and Nala Kuvera did to achieve that benediction and become purified devotees? That is my question. Who wants to answer? Yes. Sorry? By getting the association of Narada Muni for a second. That's what they did. Okay? Who has another idea? Sorry? They had good karma from the past, and now they're getting the benefit of it. Is that what you mean? Okay. You? They attracted the attention of a great soul. Okay, we got three different answers here. Anyone else? Yes. Sorry? Okay. He's the only one that has the right answer. They didn't do anything. They did nothing. What did they do? They committed an offense in front of a pure devotee. They did nothing. Zero. It was only causeless mercy. Why? Krishna said it in the shloka. I have nothing to do with these two boys. Why he has nothing to do with them? Because they have nothing to do with Krishna. As they surrender unto me, I reciprocate accordingly. They surrendered zero, so Krishna reciprocated zero. With the non-devotees, Krishna reciprocates zero because they don't want Krishna in their life, so Krishna stays out of their life. Right? So they did nothing. But Krishna says, so I have nothing to do with these two boys, but to honor the word of my pure devotee. By the mercy of Narada Muni, he said, he gave them the second benediction after the curse, that they would have the darshan of Sri Krishna when he performed his pastimes on this planet. So they did nothing. They only got causeless mercy of a Vaishnava. So that was a trick question. What did they do? And each of you were trying to figure out what was it that they did. Whenever I tell this, Leela, I always ask that question, and everybody's always trying to figure out what they did. The answer is they didn't do anything. Now, why is it that we're always trying to figure out what they did to get the mercy? Because this is called karma kanda. I did something, and I got something in return. This mentality is so deep, ingrained so deeply in our consciousness, that even when they're, it's obvious, the story, they didn't do anything. They were offensive. But we're always trying to find out something like that because it's so deep in our consciousness. But this is called causeless mercy. Causeless means they didn't cause it by doing anything. And Krishna says in that shloka, I quoted the shloka before to you. Krishna says, I have nothing to do with these boys. That means they have nothing to do with him. There's no relationship, zero. And then I said, to honor the word of my pure devotee, only to glorify Narada Muni so that his word would become true. Krishna does the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. Declare it boldly, Arjuna, that my devotee shall never perish. Now he has to honor the word of Arjuna, so his devotee will never perish. Because Krishna honors the words of his pure devotee. He doesn't always honor his own word because he's tricky. Krishna is tricky. He can say this or that. Because he's independent. He's not bound by any morality or any rules or regulations. But that's why he says to Arjuna, you say it. You tell that my devotee shall never perish. Now Krishna honors that. He will do everything to make sure that Arjuna does not appear to tell something untrue. So here, Krishna is honoring the word of his pure devotee, giving darshan to these two aparadis. Aparadis. They offended a pure devotee. What happened when Durvasa Muni offended Ambarish Maharaj? Sudarsan Chakra was chasing him everywhere. Now if we analyze that, Durvasa Muni came to Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was fully absorbed in his puja. Now, according to Vedic culture, when a guest comes to your home, you should immediately stop what you're doing, welcome him, give him a seat, give him something to drink. This is called Atithi Seva. You treat the guest in your home as good as if God came to your home. But he was so absorbed in his puja, he didn't notice that they had a guest, that Durvasa Muni had come. So Durvasa Muni was thinking, ah, just see, look at this king. Here I am, a guest, look, he's ignoring me. Now, did he say something wrong? No, he was right, it was correct. He wasn't being welcomed immediately because Ambarish Maharaj was in a different mood. Wasn't aware, totally absorbed. So what Durvasa Muni was thinking, he didn't even say anything, he was just thinking in his mind, he was correct. But still it was considered aparad by Sudarshan Chakra. Sometimes people ask me, well, if I criticize somebody, but it's true, it's the truth, then it's not aparad. Ah, really? Then I tell this pastime. Who judges what is aparad? Me or Yamaraj or Krishna? Who is the judge for that? Not me. I'm thinking it's not aparad because I'm telling the truth. Calling a thief is not fault finding, right? But finding a fault in a Vaishnava is fault finding. He's not a thief. Finding a fault in a Vaishnava is fault finding. So Sudarshan Chakra is chasing Durvasa Muni all over the universe because Durvasa Muni, he's a mystic yogi. He can go anywhere. He can do anything. Finally, he realizes, I'm not going to escape from Sudarshan Chakra. My only hope is to go to Sri Vishnu. He goes to Sri Vishnu. He says, Sri Vishnu, please help me. You know what Sri Vishnu said? I cannot help you. Basically, he said, my hands are tied. I can't do nothing for you. Why? You have offended a Vaishnava. Only he can deliver you. If you offend a Vaishnava, only he can forgive. Sudarshan Chakra cannot forgive. Sri Vishnu cannot forgive. He sent him back to Durvasa Muni. You go back there immediately, ask for forgiveness. So what does it mean that Sri Vishnu cannot help you if you offend a Vaishnava? What it means is you're cut from the mercy of God when you offend a Vaishnava. That is the proof, ninth canto. You're cut off from the mercy of Vishnu. Everybody in the street who's walking in the street, they still have the mercy of Krishna. Every animal still has the mercy of Krishna. Every meat eater, every dog eater, every rakshasa, they're not cut off from the mercy of Krishna as long as they don't offend a Vaishnava. And now one Vaishnava has offended another Vaishnava, he's cut from the mercy of Krishna. Are you shocked? Do you realize how serious it is to find fault in another Vaishnava? What is the first offense? You're all whispering. What is it? First offense. So the word in Sanskrit is sadhu ninda. So a person who's dedicated his life to propagating the holy name of the Lord, the Sanskrit word is sadhu. What is sadhu? A holy man, right? Holy person, sacred person. Sadhu ninda. I am criticizing this sadhu. Whose perspective is this? Is this Krishna's perspective? Is this how Krishna's seeing? Apiche churaracharo bhajate mama nanyabhak. You know that verse? Even if he falls down, Krishna says, I still consider him saintly. Sadhu. Sadhur eva samantavya. Sadhur eva. Certainly he's still a sadhu if he gets back into devotional service. So we're criticizing the sadhus, the other devotees in the ISKCON movement, or even just one. I find some fault. Even if it's in my mind only, then I'm in the same position as Durvasa Muni. Now I'm cut off from the mercy of Krishna. So what do I have to do? I have to go to that Vaishnava and beg his forgiveness. In my mind, I can do it first. In my mind, I pray to Krishna, I pray to that devotee, please forgive me. I beg forgiveness at your lotus feet. Then when you find him and search him out, you offer your obeisances. What happens if that devotee leaves his body before you ask for forgiveness? As is the case with Gaur Govinda Maharaj, our my dear departed godbrother. One of his godbrothers, also one of my godbrothers, offended him. And then he left his body before that Vaishnava could offer obeisances and beg for forgiveness. You know what happened? That Vaishnava blooped, went back into material life. Even though he was sannyasi, even though he was GBC, and even though he was GBC sannyasi guru, within 1 year he had blooped, gone. What does it mean, blooped? Means I left the movement? No. Means kicked out by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm thinking, I left. But we understand he committed an offense, kicked out by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is not just Durvasa Muni, it's not just Bhagavatam, it's not just some history from millions of years ago. If you offend a Vaishnava, you're cut off from the mercy of Krishna unless you go to that Vaishnava and beg forgiveness. And if that Vaishnava leaves his body before you can do that, you're in big trouble. Big trouble. So what's the solution? You never, ever find a fault in a Vaishnava. Never even think something negative. What to speak of speaking or gossiping, telling others, spreading rumors about some Vaishnava. There was another GBC sannyasi who was Prabhupada's secretary. He was traveling with Srila Prabhupada. And it was discovered that another GBC guru had fallen down with a woman. So Prabhupada's sannyasi GBC guru, secretary announced it to the General Assembly of Devotees that he has fallen down and now he's not capable of doing his service like this. And when Prabhupada heard that he had announced it like that to the other Vaishnavas, he was furious. He chastised him like anything. Now you've made it impossible for him to even come back because he'll be too embarrassed to show his face. A year later, that sannyasi secretary had blooped. Was no longer in the movement. Gone. Did he leave? Or did Lord Chaitanya take him out? Took him out. Because not ready to associate with Vaishnavas. Not mature enough to associate with Vaishnavas. Not pure enough to associate with Vaishnavas. Now I'm telling you this because these 10 offenses in chanting of the holy name, and even after understanding so many instructions on this matter, still we are doing these offenses. How many times do we have to hear these instructions over and over again till we finally stop offending Vaishnavas? So I will not say that Indra is envious. I will not say he's attached. But appears this way, that maybe there's some higher understanding that I cannot grasp. Can I understand everything? No. How can I understand everything? I'm an ant. And Krishna is God. He understands everything. What can an ant understand? Only the understanding that Krishna gives me. That's all I can understand. Mata smritir jnanam apoanam cha. Whatever Krishna gives me to understand, that I can understand. And everything else, I cannot understand. How can I understand? What shakti does an ant have? You have the Times of India newspaper, is it not? If an ant walks across the front page of Times of India, does he understand what is written there, that ink? To him, it's just black and white. He cannot understand the intricacies of Bombay society. He cannot understand that. It's not possible. Only a human being can understand that. And the difference between an ant and a human being is not very much. As a human being and God and Krishna is like unbelievably greater. So what can we understand? Only by Krishna's mercy can we understand anything. Krishna's in the heart. He'll give us knowledge. He'll give us remembrance. Or apohan shakti. He'll cover us. He'll make us forget. So when we commit an aparad, the apohan shakti clicks in. And we become covered. We forget. We don't remember. We don't have the divya gyan anymore. And so we leave the movement. It wasn't what I thought it was. That GBC guru, when he left, he took with him much money. We were all thinking it was Prabhupada's money that he had collected. We were all thinking that he was doing devotional service. But the reason he took the money, he gave this reason. He said that I worked for it. I earned it. So he took that money with him and ran off with one of his disciples, lady disciples, and married her. Okay? So let's analyze what happened. He said he worked for that money. Therefore, it was his. So that means that he never did do devotional service. Because when you do devotional service, it's not for money. It's to develop bhakti. But he cashed in whatever bhakti he had. He traded it for the money. He now became bankrupt. By his own words, I earned it. Oh, all that time you were just, it was a job only. You were working to acquire this money. You never did do devotional service. So he wasn't ready. Even though he was big, big GBC, big, big sannyasi, big, big guru. He was previously, many, many years earlier, secretary to Prabhupada even, but still he fell down. Kal Krishnadas, everybody knows Kal Krishnadas? He was traveling with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Direct association with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he ran off with the Bhattataris. Became covered, even direct association with the Lord. Sometimes we think, well, if you're in Goloka Vrindavan, you're with Krishna, how you can fall down? Prabhupada explains, we all have our minute independence. We all can make a choice. Who else has that independence? Radharani also has that independence. She can also make a choice, but she always makes the right choice. Never makes the wrong choice, because so much love is there. She is ruled by love for Krishna. But we make the wrong choice. That's why we left. That's why we're in material world. We make the wrong choice, and so therefore we end up leaving the association of Vaishnavas. So here we have Diti. Diti is taking a vow. We also took vows, is it not? A vow is a strong promise, drida vrata. So she also took vow. We vow no meat, fish, or eggs, right? What other vows do we take? No intoxication, right? No illicit sex, no gambling, no mental speculation. What vow did she take? I will kill Indra. We don't take such a vow, because that kind of a vow, I will kill somebody. Some other Vaishnava. Vaishnava Prad. We don't take this Vaishnava Prad. We don't do this. I have seen one of my godbrothers took out his Brahmin thread one time, wrapped it around his thumb, and cursed another devotee. As if he had the Shakti, like Narada Muni. But he did it. Because he was disturbed. He didn't know how to treat another Vaishnava. He became overcome by anger. What are the six enemies in the heart? Kam, krodh, lust, anger, greed, lobha, moha, illusion, hingsha, envy, mada, pride, all these things. The first time I came to Vrindavan, 1975, I came to Vrindavan. You know, they always put you in the kitchen cleaning the pots. I also used to clean the pots. I was already in Los Angeles cleaning the pots. Whenever you come somewhere new, they think new Vaishnava. So I first came to Vrindavan, here, clean the pots. Wherever you go, clean the pots. So I'm cleaning the pots with another devotee. And then we got into some discussion. Somehow that discussion, we had a difference of opinion. I don't know, I can't even remember what that discussion was. That was 32 years ago. But we got into a difference of opinion, and I was saying one thing, he was saying another thing, and we were getting very animated. But then I realized, all of a sudden I realized, I'm in the holy dham, and I'm getting a little heavy with this other Vaishnava. Immediately, I came to my senses. I dropped down to the floor. I said, please accept my humble obeisances. And I offered my humble obeisances. You know what he did? He did not accept them. He just stood there, did not accept my obeisances, remained angry, and stormed out of that kitchen. I never saw him ever again. In the last 32 years I've been traveling around the world, I've never seen him. He must have blooped. He wasn't famous or anything, but I've never ever seen him again. I guess he was taken out of the movement. So we have to be very careful. Our achar. What is more important, prachar or achar? Preaching or our own behavior? What is more important? Sorry? I can't hear you. Speak up. He says behavior is more important. Who has another idea? This is a preaching movement. What is more important, preaching or behavior? Speak up. Behavior. Ah, see? Even though this is the preaching movement, your own behavior is more important. Achar is more important than prachar. Prabhupada said, example is better than precept. Your own example in your life is better than the precept you're trying to teach others. One time when I was distributing books in Delhi, I went into the courthouse because they had a library. What I did was I distributed full sets of Prabhupada's books to every library in India, every library in Southeast Asia. In every country in Southeast Asia. That was my service. I called it the Encyclopedia of Vedic Knowledge. I would go into the library, see the librarian, and say, do you have Encyclopedia Britannica? Oh, yes, we are having. I say, do you have Encyclopedia of Vedic Knowledge? No. Ah, well, I have it here. You should get it for your library. So I went into the law library. Librarian said, we only have law books here. No, but you need this, because this is the spiritual laws. So the librarian says, I can't take that decision. Go see the judge. So she sent me to the judge. The judge was a lady. So I knock on the door. She welcomes me in. I sit down. She's sitting behind this very big desk, and she's wearing the gown of a judge. And then right above her, behind her on the wall, she had something written in big letters. And it was exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was written, let your actions be your preaching. Let your actions be your preachings. What you do is your preaching, not what you say. Because we say something and do something different. And I was very pleased to see that. It reminded me of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he said the same thing. Achar is better than prachar. So The Krishna conscious movement, even though it's a preaching movement, it's about behavior, about Vaishnav behavior. That's called Vaishnav etiquette. Because bhakti yoga is about relationship. It's all about relationship. Because bhakti yoga is teaching us about sambandha jnana. Whatever we have to know about sambandha, which is relationship. Any other jnana we're not interested in. We're only interested in sambandha jnana, relationships. How we relate to every other living entity on the planet and how we relate to the Supreme Being, Sri Krishna. And all that information, all that knowledge, how to behave in every situation, how to think, how to speak, how to act in every situation is called sambandha jnana. Lord Chaitanya, when he was teaching his, when he was giving his teachings and setting up his mission, he described his mission in three ways. Sambandha jnana was the first. He gave everything to understand about sambandha jnana. Sambandha. Second was abhideya. How to put into practice those teachings. And the third was prayojan, the goal. What happens when you do the abhideya and follow all the things that are explained in sambandha? Relationship. So it's all about relationship. So how is my relationship with the devotees? So here we're shown in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is teaching us two things. Yama and niyama. What to do, what not to do. The do's and the don'ts. This you do, this you don't do. The do's are the positive things that push us forward. We make advancement. And the don'ts, those are the negative things that will drag us down and push us out of bhakti yoga. Those are the don'ts. So some of these pastimes are illustrating the don'ts. Don't follow, you know, this pastime. Don't follow this because this is what you should not do. You remember Maharaj Vena? You remember Maharaj Vena? Yes or no? Okay, not everybody's reading the Bhagavatam. So look at Maharaj Vena. So bad qualities. We're not. Are we supposed to follow him? Is he a good example? No. Puranjan, is that a good example? No. You know what Prabhupada said about Kamsa? He says Kamsa was also Krishna conscious. He was always thinking about Krishna. But was it favorable? No. So we want favorable Krishna consciousness, not unfavorable Krishna consciousness. So even Kamsa, we don't follow him. He was thinking of Krishna moment to moment, but how to kill him. We're thinking of Krishna moment to moment, how to love him. And how do we love Krishna? I've studied the Shastras to the best of my ability, and granted, my ability is not very good. I admit it. But I have only discovered two ways that we can love Krishna. Perhaps you can enlighten me if there are more. I'll tell you the two ways. One is to chant his holy names with attention, with care and attention. Not inattentive, but with care and attention, hearing the holy names. That's the one way to love Krishna. The second way to love Krishna is to serve his devotees. If I do those two things, I'm loving Krishna. Even though I may feel my heart to be dry, dry as the Sahara Desert, but Krishna will take it that I have love for him. When Putana approached Krishna to kill him, Prabhupada said, Krishna always takes the bright side, right? She came to kill him, but how did she come to kill him? By giving poison breast. So Krishna always takes the bright side. So he was thinking, oh, she's approaching me like my mother. Like mother. But she's coming to kill Krishna. She's a demon. She has nothing good. But Krishna found something good. She's approaching like mother. He saw it like that. So even though there may be no love in our heart, of course there is. There's always love in everyone's heart. But even though I may feel I have no love for Krishna, if we chant without our mind going everywhere, if we give attention to the chanting and we serve the Vaishnavas, Krishna will say, he has pure love for me. Krishna will take the bright side. He has so much love for me. That's why Krishna is Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He only sees the good. He is the best friend of every living entity. He only sees the good qualities. Krishna cannot see bad. When he sees the bad becomes good. He saw Putana coming in a bad way, but he saw it good in a good way. Now who else sees like that? The spiritual master. The spiritual master also sees like that. He doesn't see the bad. He only sees the good that you're doing. If the spiritual master was seeing our bad, we wouldn't have much hope. But he only sees the good. Because he's Krishna conscious. What does it mean to be Krishna conscious? Not only that you're conscious of Krishna, that you're thinking of Krishna, but you have the same perspective as Krishna, the same outlook as Krishna. You see things the way Krishna sees them. That is Krishna conscious. Spiritual master also sees like that. Therefore, he's called Paramhansa. Paramhansa, topmost swan-like devotee. So, to get back to the first question, I can't say that I understand how this is going on. How someone can become smaller than the smallest, this is called anima siddhi, enter into some woman's womb, cut it into pieces, and hear all those pieces crying, speaking to those pieces, saying, don't worry, don't cry, and then cutting them again, each one 7 times. And then all those 7 times, those 7 pieces become 49 living entities. Is that within our experience? Is that within our experience? No. So one time when Prabhupada was speaking, and he was speaking from Bhagavatam, and he was speaking something, not exactly this lila, another lila. And then my godbrother Madhudvisa picked up his hand and said, Srila Prabhupada, it's very difficult to understand. We have never seen these things. Prabhupada said, what you have seen, you are barely out of the womb. We're thinking that we're strong men, really making advancements, yeah, isn't it? Don't we think like that? Prabhupada says we're barely out of the womb. That means that we're just infants in devotional service. We're infants in devotional service, completely dependent on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. We cannot even take our own step, because the infant cannot take its own step, can only lie on its back and cry. Beg for mercy. That's all it can do. Feed me. Change my nappies. Clean me. It's helpless. So Prabhupada said, what you have seen, you are just barely out of the womb. I put that lila in my book so people could understand these things. So I cannot understand this, and we're not meant to follow Diti. or to act like King Indra, but we're meant to come to the standard of no matter what happens, we do not criticize. We're not going to criticize Indra. We're not going to criticize Diti. We're not going to find fault in any of them. The only thing we can say is that whatever they're doing, I cannot understand it now. But when I'm fully Krishna conscious by mercy of Guru and Krishna, then I will be able to understand. So if I cannot understand, then how I can find fault? Is it not? So I give everyone the benefit of the doubt because I want to have the same vision as Krishna. Prabhupada says Krishna always takes the bright side, so I'm always going to take the bright side. That whatever they're doing is okay. It's okay. I can find no fault. I give them my blessings, my ashirvad. I am still the servant of the servant of the servant of Indra or Diti. If I ever meet them, I am the servant of the servant of the servant of them. They are greater than me. They're in the Bhagavatam. People of all the shastras, Diti and Indra are mentioned in practically every shastra. Every sadhu, every acharya, since time immemorial, has been reading about Indra and Diti. Hare Krishna. So we do not find fault. Now, Prabhupada, he may give some instructions to us, but he's not also finding fault by giving instruction because he's simply speaking philosophy to teach us how to behave properly. He doesn't find fault because he's topmost Vaishnava. It sometimes appears he may be criticizing someone, but he taught us we never criticize the person. We only criticize their philosophy. So someone would mention, well, what do you think of this Maharaj or that Maharaj? Prabhupada would say, well, what is his teaching? Then they would say, he's teaching like this. Then Prabhupada would slice and dice that teaching. Cut it to pieces. Or, when he was presented, once he was asked, what do you think of Saint Francis of Assisi, that Christian saint? Prabhupada said, what is his philosophy? Prabhupada always said like that. What is his teaching? So he said, he saw everyone as his brother and sister. He saw the sun as his brother and the moon as his sister. Everyone was his brother and sister. Prabhupada said, this is Vaishnav. This is Vaishnav. And then he explained, if we accept that Krishna is our father, the universality of God, then we're all brothers and sisters. If Krishna is the one God, if we accept God, God created everybody, then we're all brothers and sisters. Is it not? We all came from the same source. So Prabhupada said, that is Vaishnav. In his deep voice, that is Vaishnav. When he gave me initiation, he says, because Prabhupada had this very thick Bengali accent. Your name is Boya Shukhi Das. Boya Shukhi, he said. Boya Shukhi means Shukdev Goswami's another name. That's what he said. But when I took Diksha, I couldn't understand anything. I came back and Jayadvaita was there. I said, what did he say? What did Prabhupada say? Jayadvaita said, you got a good name. So maybe he didn't also understand. He said, you got a very nice name. So for years I was wondering, what did Prabhupada say to me? So then finally when the Bhaktivedanta archives came into existence, I went to them and I said, do you have the lecture for such a date? It was July 1975. They said, yes. So I got that lecture and I listened to it. And after the lecture, Prabhupada's giving initiation. Then they call my name, I come up, and then Prabhupada asked me what are the four regulative principles, and then I heard what he said. Your name is Boya Shoki Das. When I first came to this movement, I first met the devotees. I first saw the devotees in 1969. And I was given BTG and everything. But I was so into my own thing that I didn't follow up on it. But then in 1972, again, I met the devotees, and this one devotee became very friendly with me and wanted to preach. So then I was hearing Prabhupada's tapes, but I couldn't understand his accent. For a long, long time, I couldn't understand. But after hearing so much, after so many times, and associating with the devotees, going to the temple, having darshan of Radha London Ishwara, this was in London, and taking a little prasad, dancing around Tulsi. Finally, I was able to understand. One day, all of a sudden, it clicked. And I could enter into that dialect and understand it. Anyway, Prabhupada was so merciful. He only saw the good in everyone. Krishna only sees the good in everyone. We should only see the good in everyone. And if I'm committing the first offense, I'm not seeing the good in everyone. I'm seeing the fault. And I'm thinking that fault, and I'm speaking that fault, and my time in Krishna consciousness is now numbered. Guaranteed, I will be kicked out. It's only time separates us, unless I go to that Vaishnava and beg forgiveness. Hare Krishna. So, are there any points for discussion? Yes, Prabhu. Microphone, please.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So you said we have to avoid even thinking or criticizing in our minds other devotees. So what if we criticize so many devotees in our minds? Should we beg forgiveness at each of their feet?
Would that be a bad thing?
Probably not.
Would it be a good thing?
Yeah.
Here's how I can help you. I can help you with this. Prabhupada said, he explained that every morning, you know, when we go vancha kalpa tarubhyascha, kripa sindhubhyavacha, to all the Vaishnavas, so that's like offering obeisances to all the devotees. So sometimes Prabhupada, when he left this planet, before he left, he was saying to his godbrothers, please forgive me for any offenses I committed knowingly or unknowingly. So that's why he taught us to say vancha kalpa tarubhyascha. So knowingly or unknowingly, when you do like that, you're begging the forgiveness of all the Vaishnavas in that room. So if you go to Mayapur festival and say vancha kalpa tarubhyascha, you're forgiving all the Vaishnavas in that room. Go to the Vrindavan festival, do the same thing. You'll be begging forgiveness for so many Vaishnavas. So that is a good thing. You don't have to go to each and every one of them. If they're in that room and you do like that, vancha kalpa tarubhyascha, you're asking forgiveness. As long as you understand in your mind and your heart that that's what you're doing. If we're unconscious and we're just doing it, without understanding what I'm doing, just saying it, then you don't get an effect. But you have to be conscious. I am doing this because I'm begging forgiveness to all the Vaishnavas for any offense I may have committed knowingly or unknowingly. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare
Thank you for a very nice class.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, in the 71st text... same section.
71.
Yeah. So here it says that Indra replied, "My dear mother, because I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, I lost sight of religion. When I understood that you were observing a great vow and spiritual life, I wanted to find a fault with you. And when I found such a fault, I entered your womb and cut the embryo to pieces." So in the purport, in the last paragraph, Prabhupada is explaining that by contact of Vishnu, last statement, because of being touched by worship of Vishnu, both Diti and Indra were purified.
Okay, so Prabhupada explains earlier in the purport how that happened. they had discussion and they revealed one-on-one. They were honest with each other. They didn't keep something back. You know, like, for example, you go to buy something. He says, oh, you are Hare Krishna? For you, I make no profit. Is he telling truth? No. He's always making profit. But he says, for you, I make no profit. But they weren't like that. They spoke the truth. So they revealed their intentions, what they were actually thinking, what to each other. So they became very honest with each other and open, because they are already Vaishnavas. They were already in contact with Vishnu. So because they were in contact with Vishnu, when it came face to face, then they were very open and honest with one another. So because of being in contact with Krishna, Manigriva Nalakuvara became purified also. So what is your question? Was there a question there?
Hare Krishna. So what I wanted to really confirm is that Prabhupada writes as if that they both were mixed devotees, even though they were devotees.
Yeah, you want to analyze the level of some other Vaishnava? Is that what we want to do?
No.
Who is mixed? Who is pure?
No, Prabhupada writes here that Indra was purified in the purport. So,
if you read later chapters, then he has a whole thing with what's his name? The demon who was a real devotee? Vitrasura. He's purified. But again, he does a lila with Vitrasura. And then again, in the 10th canto, he sends the Samvartaka clouds to Vrindavan. Because now, instead of worshipping Indra, they're worshipping Govardhan. So yes, he's purified, but he's, you know, still same Indra. You know what they say? A tiger doesn't change his stripes, right? He may be pure. Maybe what he's doing is purified. Maybe it's all lila. And he has no negative intentions. Anyway, can I say I understand the mind of Indra and why he's acting like that? No. I cannot understand. I just accept what Guru and Krishna is giving to me. And I respect all living entities. But you can see from this pastime, the do's and the don'ts. So the don'ts were how they were, she's trying to kill him, he's trying to kill her embryo. But when they come face to face, they're honest with one another. We should all, you know, that is the do. So no matter how inimical, just like I tell you this story. This was way back in the early days of ISKCON in San Francisco. There was one altercation between two god brothers. So one of the god brothers went to Srila Prabhupada and says, I can no longer offer obeisances to him. Because, you know, we had big argument. I don't respect him. I don't have any feeling in my heart for him. And if I offered obeisances to him, I would be simply hypocrite. Therefore, I cannot offer obeisances to him. You understand the point that my god brother made to Prabhupada? Have we sometimes felt like that also? Here's Prabhupada's answer. Offering obeisances when you don't want to offer obeisances, that is real obeisances. And that I also put in my book. Because these are very deep teachings. We have to learn these things. That is real obeisances. Why? Because we're das, 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 under das. We're servant to the servant to the servant to the servant. Even he offends me. Tarori vasa hishnuna. I'm more tolerant than the tree. Therefore, manadena, I give all respect to others. So I offer obeisances to him, even though I don't want to. That is real obeisances, Prabhupada said. So here, Diti and Vish and Indra, they reveal their hearts. And revealing the hearts is purification. Because now that negative thing vanishes. I may have had a bad feeling towards someone person, but when we come and we talk, and we reveal our hearts, we offer obeisances to each other, then we don't have that bad feeling anymore. That is becoming purified, right? So even I become purified when I offer obeisances to someone and beg forgiveness. After you offer obeisances, usually you get up and you give embrace, is it not? That's purification. So they also became purified. But it's because we're connected to Krishna that we're behaving like that. Because we're Vaishnavas, that's why we're behaving like that. So the root cause always goes back to Krishna. Just like Krishna says, you're not the doer. But Arjuna fought the war. He says, do it. We're not the doer, but Prabhupada says, chant 16 rounds. I'm the doer. I cannot go to my temple president and say, I'm not the doer. You chant my japa for me. So what does Krishna mean when he says, you're not the doer? It means that whatever we do is by Krishna Shakti. So when we go back to the original source, it's Krishna Shakti. Krishna Shakti Vina, without Krishna Shakti, Nahitar Pravartan, you cannot do anything. You cannot preach, you cannot do anything. You cannot speak, you cannot sing. Without Krishna's Shakti, you can't do anything. At any moment, Krishna can take away his Shakti. So we have to remain humble. Because whatever we're doing, even in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever great qualities are there, is just a spark of my splendor. The ability of man is just a spark of my splendor. The child thinks the water comes from the tap. You turn the tap, out comes water. The child's thinking that's where water comes from. But the father explains, no, there's a reservoir of water. It's going through the whole pipe system and coming out the tap. So we're the tap, Krishna is the reservoir. You understand? So that's the meaning of you're not the doer. Any other questions? Yes. We are the doer, but by Krishna's Shakti. Okay.
You also mentioned two ways to love Krishna, chanting with care and attention and serving Vaishnavas. What about the third logical one in the list, Jiva Doya, having mercy on living entities? Can we develop love like that?
Yes. Depending on your mood, again. If you're going out to the living entities with the idea to help them, as the servant, that you are their servant, then that is love for Krishna. But if you're going out there thinking that you are better than them, I'm Vaishnava, they are Karmi. If you call them Karmis in a negative way, a pejorative term, that is not love for Krishna. Is that love for Krishna? No. Are you in your constitutional position, das, 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 under das, if you're thinking you're better than somebody else? No. If you're going out to distribute books so that your name can be on the list, is that Jivadoya? No. So it depends on your consciousness. If you have the right consciousness, then that is, Jivadoya is also showing that you have love for Krishna. Very good point. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. In all things, we have to have the right consciousness. You know what is Krishna unconscious? Prabhupada said, don't be Krishna unconscious. Krishna unconscious means we're doing everything that we're told to do, but only as an empty ritual. We're not thinking, what is the deep meaning? Why am I doing this? What is the deep meaning? What is my relationship with the whoever I'm dealing with? That's all Krishna unconscious. I'm doing it and I don't know what. I'm not thinking, I'm not aware, I'm not conscious. So then Prabhupada said, first become conscious, then you can become Krishna conscious. First become conscious, then you can become Krishna conscious. A lot of times we do things Krishna unconscious. We don't get the benefit Krishna unconscious. Just like chanting japa, but my mind is thinking. Chanting, but my mind is far, far away. That's Krishna unconscious. Hearing with care and attention, that is Krishna conscious. We have to be conscious. Hare Krishna. Any other points? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mahaprasad ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sisi Radha Gopinath ki jai, Hari Hari Bo.